Welcome back to Sweet Pea Podcast, The Early Years, with your host, Loretta McDonough. So today I'm back again up in Galway. It's becoming my second home. The car nearly just hits the N4 and just keeps going. And I'm here today to talk to Joanne Doherty from GMIT Mayo. She's a lecturer in early childhood education in the BA course. Mm-hmm. And today we're here to talk about different things, maybe family support we might touch on. First of all, welcome, Joanne.
Thanks very much, Loretta.
And we're here in Galway, and as I said, but this is not your home.
Well, my home is Galway. I am a Galway girl.
Oh, are you?
I am, yeah, but I work in Mayo.
So do you commute?
Not from Galway City, from Galway County. I live in North Galway, so I commute to Castlebar.
What is that? Is that a huge commuter?
No, it's only about 40 minutes.
Well, that's not too bad. From the north side to the south side at
exactly,
home in Dublin.
Exactly, exactly. I'm kind of halfway between Castlebar and Galway.
Okay, yeah.
Up near the beautiful village of Clonbar, near Cong, Ashford Castle, that direction.
Gorgeous,
so
lovely.
Nice space to live in.
Nice part of the country.
Nice part of the country.
So today, start off by just telling us your background and how you are here today and how you got into childcare maybe.
Okay, Loretta. Well, my background is in early years, early childhood education and care. I would have studied in DIT in the late 80s in preschool care.
Okay.
Would have done that. Noreen Hayes would have been one of my lecturers at the time.
Yes, of course.
And from there then I started to work in the disability sector in an organisation in Mayo again called Western Care Association. Quite a progressive organisation at the time, in that they had an early childhood department there, which had a multidisciplinary team working with children under six. Generally, we were in-home advisors, we were called.
Okay.
So we worked within the home with children with disabilities from whatever time the families were ready for some support, which could be from 6 weeks old, or you might be working with children who might have got a diagnosis later on in childhood. So from there, I worked a lot with the children in their home, but also with preschools within the county, because we used to try and support children with any type of disability to attend their own community preschool or the preschool closest to them, so that they would be part of their community. So from that, I got to know a lot of the services in the county, and we would work very closely together around facilitating that child going there. We used to provide support workers with the children to attend the preschool or whatever was appropriate for that particular child.
Okay.
And then at home, I used to work with the parents or the childminder or the granny or whoever was minding the child at home in the house around their developmental needs, which was set. We had developmental IEPs done at that time by a multidisciplinary team. So I would work very closely with speech and language, physio, social work, psychology, whichever. I did that for 16 years. Really loved that job, really loved travelling around to families and working with them. And the children with disabilities were ranging in all types of disabilities, some very ill children, some children very well able that progressed on. And then I moved from there into the HSE. Actually, it was probably the Western Health Board at the time. Or HSE.
Yeah, because I think it was.
They moved through
it
different organisations.
Yeah.
And there I worked, they were starting a new early childhood department that were looking for development workers to work on the quality of services in the county. The idea behind this, I suppose, was our childcare manager at the time would have seen preschools as being the first place parents go for help.
Yeah.
And he would have thought that if we had good quality early year services that would support parents in their parenting, then we would be on a winner in relation to investing later on in life.
And when was that? 19?
That was in 2002.
So he was well ahead of himself, really, when he was thinking forward thinking, wasn't he, really?
Forward thinking, yeah. We worked very closely. We actually in the same department as the inspectorate at the time, which was interesting, and which was good because it meant that the inspectorate could highlight some services to us. We would go out and support them and improve their practice. There I would have trained as a high scope trainer, and we trained within the county of preschool workers or early years educators in the high scope approach, and then supported their practice around
Brilliant. So the trainer was training practice.
And part of that would have been looking at how do we, number one, embed the whole idea of high scope within settings, but also how does that transfer into home? and how do we support parents around that? So in the UK, HiSCOPE UK had a lovely program that was developed around doing a 6-week classes with parents around HiSCOPE that they could do at home. So a number of services did that. And so the parents then became part of the approach as well.
It was so great, wasn't it? So it was a whole holistic approach then towards
A whole holistic approach towards it. Yeah, it was very interesting. It was very good. Then,
and sorry, did parents get involved? Like, did you ever have issues with parents not wanting to get involved or anything like that?
In the training like that? Yeah, we only piloted it once and it was interesting. Some services had, they wouldn't have had full complement of parents, but they did have some parents. They all ran it. So they might have had 25-30% of their parents attend, and that was about it. But
still,
the parents that did found it really useful, particularly the problem-solving approach and the idea of not having to go out and buy lots of toys.
Absolutely,
the open-ended material idea and things like that were really, really useful to them. Within Tusla then, I suppose, with the developments in the earlier sector, with Better Start, with the County Childcare Committees taking on a role in relation to quality, our role was being diminished more and more. And within Tusla, they were looking and saying, well, this is happening somewhere else. We don't need to provide it.
Different departments taking over and things like that.
They moved us into more targeted family support with individual families. So they have an early years family support section. So it would have been doing family support with families of children under 6. And a lot of that work really was working with parents more so than children.
Okay.
Because it was really around, you know, children having unmet needs. It wouldn't be children who would be known to the social work department. That was a separate road. We didn't work with those. We worked with children with unmet need to keep them out of that.
Of that.
System.
So early intervention, really.
Early intervention stuff, yeah. So that was very interesting for a while. I really enjoyed that. Enjoyed working with some fantastic parents that just made such a change in their lives. I just admire them so much at some of the things they've done and how they have just gone on with somebody just being there to say, yeah, you can do this and get on with it. And what is it you want to do? Where are your goals? How are you? Which was always a big question parents found. Yeah. Very difficult to answer that we're in a bit of a crisis, you know.
Because they weren't in the equation. They were like, it was about their child or
their child
surviving.
My child isn't behaving at preschool. My child isn't doing this at preschool. And the preschooler telling me this. And it was really, they were stuck in that, you know, when they really were just needed a little bit of support to get out of there. And then I moved to GMIT initially as the practice placement coordinator for social care workers. So I did that for 2 years, and in that time, GMIT were looking at the whole BA in early childhood education and care. So they had a bones of a document there, which didn't get through validation at that point. So when I came on board, myself and some of the other lecturers looked at it again, and then here we are with the BA.
And it's your third year, going into your third year.
Going into our third year,
Congratulations.
Yeah.
It's great, isn't it?
It's good, yeah.
Yeah, it is good.
Enjoying it.
And it's good that we can see that more colleges and universities are taking on the early years curriculum and are, you know, setting it as a BA because it's very important.
Yeah, I suppose my own master's then I did in 2010. I finished it. It was in family support practice here in NUIG, which was just an eye-opener. I loved the course. It was 2-year course and learned
so much.
Full-time
or part-time?
It was part-time. It was one that was, it's 50% supported by the Department of Youth, Children and Youth Affairs.
Okay.
So it is for people in the workplace. So you've been working at the time. It was it's just a very good, it's done here in the Life Course Institute here in NUIG. It was a 2-year part-time.
And do they still hold that? They still do that?
Yeah.
I must put that up on my site for people to get in and have a look at it, you know?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one because you can do it from whatever perspective. I did it from an early years perspective in family support. So all of my assignments would have been based around all that type of stuff. Even though in my class you would have had people from domestic violence services, youth services, public health, other early years services. Some child protection services, but so it was a real mix of a class.
So this brings us to family support.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is family support? You know,
it's as broad as it is long, as they say. You know, family support can be anything. All families need support. What levels of support is up to them as to what they can accept. So even doing something like I was at the hairdresser's the other day and I just was thinking to myself because the hairdresser has 3 young boys And her dad was in the hairdressers and he was retiring. His retirement due was that night and they were all excited. And next thing her phone rang. They had forgotten to pick up the boys from school. And it was 5 miles down the road. And it was a neighbour saying, I will bring them to my house.
Oh.
Tell your dad to collect them there. And I went, that in itself is family support.
It is.
You know, relying on, yeah. And that's the best form of family support, yeah. Is when you get it within your own community and you get it from people you can rely, yeah. On, people you trust, rather than it being something that's imposed on you. That idea of social support or having really good social capital within your life is a really good place for family support.
And but I think, yeah, that's, yeah, I know you're going to say, but I'm just thinking of Dublin and cities. And the amount of young families, mm-hmm. that are isolated now from their own families, whether that is,
absolutely.
Whether they lived in Galway and, mm-hmm. then they've moved to Mayo, or whether they're from Mayo and they've moved to Dublin, mm-hmm. it's that support system that the neighbour down the road that knows the daddy for such a long time,
yeah.
can easily pick up the children. His trust, sure. is there.
Sure, absolutely. And that was the but. But you have this where you have, where we're building big urban areas where those natural support systems aren't there. Also where we have very vulnerable families who are in low socioeconomic groups. Mm. And whatever we say, in those groups are the most vulnerable, where children are in danger of being within that and continuing to have very serious unmet needs. But I think, I would always say, our country runs on voluntary groups. It is run by voluntary groups who are doing so much good stuff.
Yeah.
And really, we need to look at our policy in relation to that. And I know we were going to talk a little bit around family support in First Five. And I think First Five has something really, the earlier strategy has something really good to say in relation to that, because we have some really good models of practice where people are being supported within their communities, and be they in very vulnerable communities that we have. They are urban communities. And more so, that's not to say we don't have vulnerable communities in rural areas.
Absolutely not.
But in places like Moy Ross, where they did the project there, where they started to support families and parents getting back, providing childcare, providing good parenting supports and strategies within that. Young Ballymun in Dublin has a, yeah. very good record of that. And Cusson in Tala, the CDI Tala, run by Marion Quinn, fantastic service there. That these are really good models of practice. I suppose when we were looking in Mayo at those type of practices, we were looking at how could we translate them into the context of rural areas.
And it's very important that we remember that.
Yeah.
With each area, there's a context and what family support is needed in that area.
And what it looks like in that area. If you think about in the past, like in the, you know, the early 90s in Mayo, they had this lovely scheme called the Community Mothers Scheme, where they trained women within communities to go support other women within their communities of newborn babies.
Isn't that lovely?
Which, yeah. is the type of thing you're talking about, where people are very isolated. So we have LifeStart, of course, do the same thing. And they do that in Donegal, which is a really nice program where they train people within communities and they provide a monthly visit to every newborn child up to the age of 5. The first child in any family. So if the parent has somebody coming in talking about the next developmental milestones, what you can do, how you can play with your child. And they're beginning to replicate that within Tusla now in what they're calling the parent champion group. So that, I hope that will give that type of natural support rather and creating it rather than imposing it.
Yes, and waiting for the need to happen. So having that,
exactly.
set in place so that it's so natural that the parents say, oh, sure, Joanne is coming over next month, or I can't wait till Joanne comes over, because, yeah. this is after happening.
I'm going to ask her this.
Yes, yeah. and, yeah. to have somebody just to ask, mm-hmm. you know, and yeah, I'm doing okay, I'm doing the right things.
Yeah, and when I used to work with families, it was just amazing. Like some families I'd go into, it was all developmental, and we'd sit down and we'd be doing all sorts of work with the child and the parent and trying to get the parent to play with the child by reading a story or finding pictures in a book. And another family I would go into, and the mum would be so exhausted, I would say, go upstairs for an hour and read a book. You know, she had 3 other children.
Yeah.
They were all busy. They were running a business from home. This child had very high needs, very little supports there for, yeah. her. Other than somebody would come in to let her go collect the other boys from school, come back again, you know, which isn't, yeah. really her time out. So instead of following the developmental program, I'd just say, do you know what you do? Up and have a bath. Stay
I'm
upstairs.
Here. I have it.
I'm going to say, and that was enough to give her And she used to be very grateful for it because she'd say, nobody else comes in and says, and I'd be going, look, I can see what you need.
Yeah, and this is your need. Like you said, you're in need when you were going in and asking, ma'am, how are you?
Yeah, yeah.
This is, you know, so parents are very important.
Very important. I think we really need to look after them. We really need to think about them in our everyday practice as well. Think about what is it, you know, what is it we want from parents, number one? What is it can they give and how are we going to get there?
And so as practitioners and new students coming in to the sector, what is our role in that?
Well, I think our role is really to talk about that relationship. And one of our modules in GMIT is building interpersonal relationships within the earlier sector. So those relationships will be with staff. How do you build those relationships and keep those relationships authentic and real? Because there's no point in having a relationship that isn't authentic.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't work that way.
Very false. So and it doesn't. It nurtures nothing.
It nurtures nothing. And also to remember, we can't build authentic relationships with everybody. We're all human. So there will be some people that you're going to meet that you're just going to go, oh, I'm not really going to get anything from you and you're not really going to get anything from me because this isn't working. And to be able to stand back and say, that's okay. Do you know her over there? You two seem to get on great. That's going to be better.
Okay.
We're human at the end of the day. We're not robots. So when I start the module, we start working with parents being the first thing. I think that is even before we start working with the children, how to get students into that idea that parents come in many different shapes and sizes, different ideas of what their child is going to get from the preschool and what you're going to give them to what is actually happening and how do you get that message across and how do we all work together in this for this little person that we're all so enthusiastic and passionate about. And also, I suppose we start with one of the very, very true sayings that Yuri Bronfenbrenner said is that every child needs somebody who thinks that they are the most important thing person in the world, but they also need somebody who thinks they're exactly the same as everybody else in this room.
So bring those feet back down to ground.
And I say that to new parents all the time. They say, I met a friend of mine the other day, they had just had a baby, and I said, is she the most beautiful baby you've ever seen? And he said, she actually is. And I said, that is correct.
Yes, she is.
And she will always be, you know, for you.
Yeah.
That's, you know.
It is so true. And I think we have to remember that the children that we bring in the door and we open that door, and it could be for the first time they left the parents, that it could be the parents' first time that they're leaving their child.
Absolutely.
They're one and only. Mm-hmm. Now, they could have six children at home, but at that moment, that one and only is going
it's
to be
the most important. And it's the most important that you're taking into this room, by the way.
Yes.
You know, I know you've 19 other children, but
I don't
remember
care.
You've mine. That's the most important, you know.
I don't care about anybody else.
Exactly. And so they shouldn't. Yes. And so they shouldn't. That's their job.
Yeah.
But our job is different. And so to realise that, and there's no way we can change that for a parent, and no way we should. But recognising that. So it's really important that we do that. And I think that it's really important for early years educators or practitioners to be in that space of going, okay, you know, this is what this parent has to offer. This is how I'm going to use it. This is what they have to give me. I think our job is to initiate that involvement. I don't think it's fair to say, oh, those parents aren't involved. Those parents aren't involved because we haven't initiated it properly.
Yeah. So if a parent isn't involved, you really have to reflect on why.
Why? Mm. And what does that involvement look like? What am I expecting? Am I expecting too much? Mm. Or maybe it's the grandparent that may be more interested in being involved than the parent.
Yeah.
You know.
And does it matter?
Does it matter? Does it matter? We still will find out a lot more about that child.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's who it is.
So if our role is to know the parent and to have that, nurture that relationship, because the parent is, I think the parents, what they want for their child is to be safe, happy and cared for. So we have to assure the parent that in the time we have that child.
First and foremost, yes.
First and foremost. And there is a trust. Like I remember I was talking to Dr. Sheila Garrity and she was saying about that trust between a parent and a caregiver. Mm-hmm. So, but how does for family support, how does the practitioner gain that trust and how do they know when that family may need support? How do you get there? So from the very first day, parent arrives with the child, you don't know anything. You've no you've no idea what the family's about or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they can write down little information about the family. But other than
and
that...
And oftentimes they don't write down all the information.
Absolutely.
For fear of being judged. And generally it's for fear of being judged. So you really... I think those relationships take time. Mm-hmm. They do take time. Also, we have to remember we can't. We're not here to solve problems for every family. Early years practitioners and the settings in early years are not. That is not your job. Is to solve everybody's problems, and everybody's issues, or every child's unmet need. But what I do think is that we can be their first port of call. But what we also need to know them within that is where to. What are the pathways for them?
Yes.
Where do they go? Where do they get help? So our role is to signpost. Sometimes we can support them. Sometimes we can do a little bit more for them. But in general, we couldn't. That'd be too mammoth a task to do all the family support stuff they're talking about in first five. That is, you know, of course we're going to have a role in it. We're going to have a role in signposting parents into directions where they can get support.
Yeah.
So I think for us, our role is to be knowledgeable about that, to have that information available, to have it visible in the setting, so it's not just pulled out from one parent and not for another. Because one parent might be in saying, I need family support, I need help, I cannot get my child dressed for bed at night. Whereas another parent might be going, I need family support, I'm not telling anybody, but it's domestic violence in my house.
Absolutely. You
know, so we have to have the signposts there and visible and know them ourselves locally and where people can get support.
Yeah.
And building those relationships with those services is really important.
Yeah. And there can be a block because maybe this first five will help us, mm-hmm. you know, find out where that information is or where to go. And I know usually it's our social welfare nurse or, you know, the mm-hmm. clinic or something mm-hmm. like that. And you might go and if they don't have the information and, you know, and you don't want to feel like you're telling on a family or, you know, the way there can be that.
I suppose it's even simpler than that. Even just that we know that TUSLA exists and what are the services within that? Because we really don't have to go much further than there.
Okay.
We know, okay, is there a family resource centre locally? Where is our local family resource centre? Is it there? What does it do? That's it. We don't really need to know an awful lot more.
Okay.
Because once we go into TUSLA, there's a whole section on family support that we can go into and look at what... And they have the whole parenting 24/7 up there that gives you the tips in relation to development. They're taking those tips from ASTR. So they're using the ASTR information sheets to give tips to parents on parenting. So there's quite a lot of resources available to us within the systems that we have. Of course, and look, I know early years educators and practitioners are really busy and they have everything coming at them with regulations and education-focused inspections. But I do think that if we are moving into this area of saying, right, you know, we have a role to support families or signpost families for support, then we should be knowledgeable about that.
Yeah, you know? Have a little package maybe given to each family, whether they need it or not, might be a nice idea. You know, the flyers and leaflets that you get in the clinic and or off TUSLA, and then have a little package that it could be a welcoming package maybe, might be a nice idea to going forward.
Yeah, forward. Yeah. And I think going forward, like I know our family support service in Mayo did a research recently around where do parents get their information, and it's online. That's where they look.
That's where they look.
People don't pick up leaflets anymore. People don't use them.
I'm so old school.
I know. I would be the same. I'd be pissed still picking up leaflets.
I do that all the time at the doctors. Oh, that's interesting. I'll take a few of them.
I have a few leaflets on this and that. But they researched it and the parents had said, no, we will go online. We will get it on a social media site. Do a parenting web, a Facebook page.
Okay.
And they have done all that. TUSLA now have those.
Okay. So Facebook maybe giving pages. Them the information to find, like you said, a visual signpost at the door, welcoming the notice boarders and having it visually there that they can, or on your webpage.
I just think it sometimes there's a little bit of a disjoint between, you know, because people go, oh, well, I'm early years and this is what I do, or I'm school age and this is what I do, or I'm primary school and this is what I do, I'm secondary school, that there is this over, this umbrella that we should be accessing to keep, you know, that we can be just information givers. Here's, you know, would you like me to help you ring? Will I ring it for you?
And often that kind ear, you know, that listening, that little 5 minutes or the 10 minutes that you give to a parent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It can mean so much.
Yeah.
And we had a conference recently that it was a disability one, and it was like a seminar, but a parent got up to talk. And it was really interesting what she said. She talked about having her son with Down syndrome, and it was her third child, maybe, I can't remember. But having this idea that, you know, wondering even when he was born, where is he going to go? What is he going to do? How am I going to get there? He was quite unwell, everything like that. And feeling a little bit out of her community, not part of her community, because this is a new identity she had. Yeah. And this is a new world that she was entering. And walking down, or coming out of mass, I think she said, one day, and the child was turning about 2.5. And the lady who ran the local preschool came over and said, I can't wait to see your Johnny. Is he coming to us next year?
Oh,
and she said that made her day. Because she never once thought he'd be accepted like that. She didn't ask how he was, just, oh, I'm sure, is he coming to us next year?
Can't wait.
Can't wait.
Had the other two.
And but the parents' point was that early years educators don't realise the power they have in making a parent feel welcome, feel wanted, and have their child feel wanted too.
And it is very powerful tool we have.
It's like a very powerful
tool. We should use it more.
Yeah. But we should be conscious of how are we using it, and conscious of that that is what we, you know, that what we say will leave, as they say, every passerby will leave a print on a child. It's the same with the parent. You know, everybody who goes through parenting and is a parent, you know, yourself, if somebody says something to you, it sticks with you.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Sticks with you. Yeah.
And that kind person smiling at the door if you haven't seen anybody and maybe not coping a little bit at home, you know, that maybe that little 5 or 10 minutes at the door to make that, or the quiet parent that doesn't really ask the questions.
Yeah. That doesn't really ask the questions. Yeah. You know, it's the same as that we look out for the invisible child in our preschool room. We have invisible parents too that are always under the radar, you know, but do we actually pay enough attention to them?
And it's not that we're going to assume there's something wrong.
No. Yeah. No, they may be perfectly happy, but it's just checking in.
Yes.
It's just checking in.
Yeah. Giving the nod, making sure everything is okay. So, and family support, like you said, it's very hard to define
it. Yeah, it's a big spectrum. Like, you can have family support, which is very casual support, where somebody just needs to be, you know, encouraged or just told that they're doing okay, to a higher end where somebody really is at the point of crisis.
Yeah, you know? And like you said, that for earlier sector and for practitioners, kind of getting the knowledge of where the resources are and the information is, and sending parents in the right direction. So, and then just checking in and making sure that they're included and they're welcomed.
Yeah, and also that we can't, you know, sometimes we can't solve everything. We're not, you know, we are early years educators, that's what we are. Part of that is looking holistically at the child, and no child exists on their own in our setting. They're an extension of somebody else at that point. They haven't yet gone out into the world.
Yeah.
So it's to keep, be mindful of that, I think.
And parents have a huge influence over children and their well-being and how they...
And we make mistakes. As early as we make mistakes with parents as well. And, you know, don't be afraid of that, because we can't predict exactly how a parent might react to you asking, how are you today? And that was just the wrong thing at the wrong time.
Yeah.
And you weren't to know.
No, of course not.
No.
And I know in Dublin,
we have to
very
be real.
And I know in Dublin, very busy setting. And I'm sure all around the country that parents are working and, you know, rent and mortgages are quite high. And so there's a lot of pressure.
Under a lot of pressure.
It's a different type of pressure families have now. You know, it's
totally.
Not like the pressure like years ago, maybe with no work and things like that. It's, you know, it's just a different type of pressure, that the pressure to make ends meet. And they could be
and
both
the
working.
Expectation on parents combined with that, the expectations that their children have to be doing this and this. It's that, you know, I saw recently that there's a big push, you know, there's no harm in a child being bored. You know, the art of doing nothing, as I used to say to my own children in the summer, they'd say, well, what about summer camp? And I'm doing two of them. And then you learn the art of doing nothing, because that's really important, that children, you know, spend time self-regulating. It's all back to that, you know, being able to manage themselves.
Yeah, and finding time and giving them time. And also to be in their house and in their environment.
At home, yeah.
You know, coming in and out of the door 50 times and being screamed at in
or out. There's a reason summer holidays are summer holidays. You know, our children's brains need a break. Everybody needs a vacation. Everybody needs to stop. and slow down for a little while, you know, in order for development to continue.
And to find out those things that they like, or to lie in the bed and look at the ceiling, have their thoughts come in. And it's okay to have thoughts. Either way.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe parents need more support in the summertime.
Maybe. This is it. Maybe. Spaces where nothing can happen.
And mommy can
Wouldn't
go
it be lovely?
A padded ball, but get like a big, huge park for parents to go in the summertime.
Well, this is it. And I think that's something that is coming out, that the green spaces for children to get out in, particularly, as you say, in very busy spaces in Dublin and in our cities that aren't there, you know?
And I know there's a problem with homelessness, and we have to be very mindful that when we're making new homes, that we don't forget that that space is very important.
Really important. And we're seeing more and more through research how important it is from that sensory overload, or how learning can happen within that, just being in those spaces with those natural materials.
And Joanne, in GMIT in Mayo, how do you prepare students for this when they're going out into the real world, into practice, in the relationship with parents and the support that they may be the supportive person in whatever form it comes?
Yeah, I suppose we have a couple of modules that hit on it. One module is the building relationships in first year. And that's quite generic. It's really very much about you as an early years educator building relationships with staff, team, with parents, with children, and with outside agencies.
Realistic module, because I don't know if I've heard of that before. You know, it's about the person, you know, the people in it.
It's about the people in it. And so we do a lot of work around key worker systems. We would do a lot of work about better outcomes, brighter futures. You know, their strategy for families or for young people in Ireland. We would do a lot around interaction strategies with young children. So how we play as partners, how we play beside children, how we enter children's play, and all those type of things. And we also talk about when relationships don't work.
Yes, that's
what
really
we can do about it. And why that's not something that is something that's going to happen. It'll always happen. We would do a lot of workshops around role play. You know, you're the early years educator. A parent is coming into you today. I give them a scenario that you're coming in to enroll your child and your husband has just been incarcerated. He's just been sent to prison. So you're coming to enroll your child. How are you going to react to him? You know, they've great fun with it. You know, you're coming in and you're very excited because your child is going to be top of the class. It's going to be the best child ever. It's going to, you know, very enthusiastic about your child coming in. This early educator has never met a child like this before. So, you know, give them lots of fun scenarios.
Yes.
But this is a reality. Parents do come in with other things on their mind and going on. You're just about to be made homeless and you're enrolling your child here in this preschool. Fill out the enrollment form with this parent. So I give them actual enrollment forms that they have to fill out, and the parent is going, yeah, that's my address. You know, how do you react to that?
Yes.
So it's this, all that type of stuff. So that's one module which is very much based on practice. And then in third year, we do a module on family-centred practices. So we talk about what is a family-centred practice. So if we were thinking about child-centred practice, parent-centred practice, how do we encourage a family-centred practice? So we talk a lot about, you know, inclusion in that, children with disabilities, children coming from where English isn't the first language. And then we talk about services as well. So we talk about all the different types and models of services. We would look in depth at things like the services that we spoke about earlier. What made those services work? What is the research behind them? What have they evaluated them? So they're the two modules that we would sit a lot in relation to relationships. And then in third year, there is going to be, or in fourth year, there's another module on relationships.
Okay, so it's really important. It follows through.
Through each year. Now, in fourth year, the relationship really is about the educator themselves.
Okay.
So it's moving much more into self-reflection, really getting into what are my attachment styles? How do I look at them? How do I do all those? Now, Mary is doing that module, the other lecture. So it was kind of to follow through on those relationships type things.
Okay.
But also we felt that our earlier as educators, when they are finished year four, we wanted to look at that we weren't educating them just to work within earlier settings. You know, that this is a sector that is really growing. So family support is going to become a big part of that. Yeah. So we wanted them to be skilled enough to be able to go into that type of work, should they be interested, into education-focused inspections, Better Start, the mentoring, the AIM, you know, that they had the opportunities for all of them and they had the knowledge within the degree to do that. Getting back to what we were talking about, the parent picking up the children from the school and ringing the friend and saying, I have them. We are going to be taking on that role at some point.
Yeah.
When particularly when you're talking about parents being isolated or living away from home or in another country where their English isn't their first language. You know, how does that happen? What do we do in that scenario?
And for us as practitioners and service providers to think about it. Just think about it.
Reflect on it. What can I do? That parent is not engaging with me, with my initiation. How can I initiate it some other way?
Yeah.
Is there some other way I can do that?
And that in itself is a huge step.
A huge step. And it could have a most amazing impact on that parent. We don't know.
Yeah. And we can only try.
Yeah. We can only try. And we are only human. We're not robots.
Did you hear that? We're only human.
Yes.
Joanne, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Great, Loretta. Thanks for
and
having me.
I hope you enjoyed it.
I did. Interesting. First podcast ever. I'm very happy.
So come here. I'm going to come down to Mayo. I'm going to see you and all the lads.
Great. We'd love to have you.
Do something together, maybe, with the students.
Great.
All right.
Great. It'll be really interesting. Keep a lookout for our students on Loretta's podcast.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks for being here.
Okay. Thank you, Loretta. Bye.
So there you have it. On to the next time. This is your host, Loretta, telling you to take care and be kind to yourself.